Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
I'm Jay Moran.
I'm Bridget Jaipal Valenza.
I'm Thomas O'Neill White.
We need to get together and let our voices be heard.
This is What's Next. A dedicated hour to have important conversations about the issues facing the marginalized and underrepresented communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario.
We're going to have some real healing. We've got to have space to tell some uncomfortable truth.
What's Next continues our mission to discuss race,
equity,
and the common concerns of Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
Good morning and welcome to What's Next. I'm your host, guest host for today, Ryan Zunner, joined by reporter with WBFO as well, Alex Simone.
Good morning.
And our guest today, architect James Baptiste. Thanks, James, for joining us.
Good morning, Ryan. Good morning, Alex. Thanks for having me.
And we're going to have a really important conversation today on the Turtle Building and its importance to the local Native American community and efforts to save it. First, before we dive into that conversation with James, we're going to start out with a piece that Alex put together, sort of overviewing the Turtle Building and what that means and some of the recent efforts underway.
For WBFO News, I'm Alex Simone. The Turtle Building in Niagara Falls has been touted by many members of the local Native American community as an important cultural landmark. But the significance of the building and the surrounding area goes beyond the confines of a concrete structure. The Turtle Building isn't just significant to the Haudenosaunee as a convention center. The entire area of Niagara Falls is an important part of the Six Nations' culture and history. Native historian Rick Hill, Six Nations Tuscarora, says the falls serve as important spiritual landmarks for nature.
There's ancient stories about the power and the spirit of Niagara Falls and the thunder beings who used to live behind the falls. They're the ones that would bring the spring rains, but they're also on a universal battle with these huge serpents that live in the waterways. And so they're constantly trying to chase those serpents away because those serpents are trying to destroy our lives. When you go to the falls and look at it with that kind of lens, you realize what a powerful thing nature is.
Elements of the natural world are a common theme in Haudenosaunee teachings and oral history, like the turtle.
The turtle, probably because it's still here from the days of the dinosaur, represents that long antiquity of life here on the earth. But also is there's a sense of renewal attached to that. So when you think about that, then the turtle or the earth on its back represents ever-growing life, constantly regenerating.
Sean Wilson, president of Native American Community Services Board, says in terms of the Turtle Building, its own origins increase its importance.
It's important to point out that it was an indigenous architect, Dennis Sunrhodes, that designed the turtle, or that was the architect behind it. And if you look at all the architects in the United States, you know, less than 0.5% are indigenous. So we really don't have many buildings, designed by indigenous architects in the United States. So the fact that you have a indigenous architect that designed the turtle, that in itself is something that the community should be rallying behind.
Hill says he helped with the turtle when it was being built decades ago. So seeing it vacant for so many years is difficult.
Vision. It was a great hope that by using the turtle as a symbol, we could create this an international showcase for indigenous art and culture and performance. And it took off that way. Unfortunately, its life, it was short-lived. It was so sad that it couldn't continue and achieve what it did. However, while it was there, it was really spectacular. It really did what it intended to do. It brought people together. They saw a whole new way of looking at indigenous life and art.
Wilson says one of the biggest factors in reopening the turtle would be determining how to avoid roadblocks that doomed it the first time. He says pursuing a second go-round means securing a consistent revenue stream.
Open. What's your revenue source? And we've had a few roadblocks there. So we've reached out to Niagara Falls for the blueprints. for this building. And, you know, it appears that they left the building at one point in time and just never came back. Things like that are critical because you're going to need to know the blueprints so that you can establish the number of attendees that you can have in there. Once you can establish all of that, then you can work up your models on revenue of how many events are you going to have.
One of the last remaining hopes to preserve the building is getting it declared a state landmark. While local landmark designation was voted down earlier this year, the Turtle does meet criteria for state landmark application.
There's more efforts continuing to get it onto like a state registry, national registries, and so on. But it ultimately is going to come down to the ownership of that building. So the owner would have to complete steps to preserve that building.
Niagara Falls Redevelopment, who owns the building, previously has declined requests for comment, instead pointing to a copy of its letter to the Niagara Falls City Council from February. NFR claims in the letter that it would be open to negotiations, but did not feel that a financially viable option was presented from the indigenous population. For WBFO News, I'm Alex Simone.
And this is What's Next on WBFO. Again, I'm your guest host for today, Ryan Zunner, joined by reporter Alex Simone, and our guest in studio right now, somebody who knows a lot about what you just heard about the Turtle Building in Niagara Falls, James Baptiste. James is a member of the Tiondanega Mohawk First Nation, a few hours outside of Toronto. And part of that, what you heard in there, less than 0.5% of architects in the American Institute of Architects are indigenous, and James is one of them. James, thanks so much for joining
us today. Thank you. Thanks for having me again. Yeah, it's quite an honor to be involved with this project that was designed by a Native American architect that's still standing, while being one of the few Native American architects that are in the country, and maybe the only one in New York State or one of a small handful that are actually practicing.
Yeah. Talk about how you got involved in this latest effort to save the turtle and bring some life back into it. What drew you to the project?
The Village of Lewiston needed another member for their Historic Preservation Board. And they typically want to have somebody from the village. I live in the town of Lewiston. They couldn't find someone available in the Village of Lewiston, so they expanded their search to the town of Lewiston and immediately came up with my name and gave me a call. The mayor gave me a call and invited me to be a part of the board. And at my first meeting on the board, they just had a statement of activities that were coming up soon that people on the board might be interested in. And they mentioned the Friends of the Turtle. And I just, of my own volition, said, oh, that sounds like I'd like to go see that. So I just walked into their meeting, their next available meeting. And when they found out that I was a Native American architect, they just were so glad to have me there for all the things that I could possibly offer to their group.
Mm. Yeah, and as you mentioned previously in discussions with us, one of the ways that you're already seeing that is that you recently were able to acquire the original, or at least the digital blueprints for the Turtle Building, right?
That's right. So we've been trying to get paper copies for some time, and they're just unavailable because of the date. We called former contractors, other sources that we could think of to go get those drawings. And fortunately, Carl Skopinski found that they were digital copies or paper copies were housed at the University of Minnesota, and reached out to them, and that they gave us a price to scan those drawings and provide them to us digitally. So my company paid the invoice yesterday, and they're going to email me in 5 to 10 days and send me digital copies of all the original construction documents for that building.
Mm-hmm. And diving into why the turtle is so important to the Native American community, we talked before we went on air about that sort of I don't want to say breakdown of the differences between, Native Americans growing up in urban environments and on the reserve, but it seemed like the turtle for its time in existence through the 80s and into the 90s was that center meeting point for so many in the Native American community, no matter where you lived, if it was Six Nations up in Tiondanega, wherever. It was that centerpiece for Native American thought, for art, all those things.
That's right. You know, my sons used to go work at a Salvation Army camp every summer. And during the middle of summer, exactly in the middle, they would bring back home with them 30 international other workers who were serving at the Salvation Army, helping take care of kids. They were camp counselors, if you will. And they were from all over the world. And when they found out that we were Native American, they would say, we didn't know Native Americans existed anymore. We just saw them in movies. We thought they were just part of history. So that in itself speaks to the need for something like the turtle. We have 9 million visitors a year coming to Niagara Falls, and how many of them want or need to know that we still exist. So that could be a great place for that.
Mm-hmm. And you're a turtle clan yourself, and there's so much symbolism with the turtle building, right?
Yes.
For Haudenosaunee, for teachings and traditions. Was that, you know, part of the reason why you wanted to jump in on this is to keep that, those teachings, those traditions alive?
Certainly, at least the values that it represents. I can't say that I have a deep-rooted cultural experience with the Native American lore because I wasn't raised in it. I'm picking it up secondhand as I go because I was raised off the reservation. Mm-hmm. But I have a deep, deep appreciation for the environment and for raw materials and just being smart about the way that we build things. And the turtle in our culture represents the caretaker of the earth and her elements. So it just seemed appropriate that me as Turtle Clan and that building needing a leg up the way it does was just a match made in heaven, if you will.
And as far as Dennis Sunroads, the architect who originally designed this, the turtle building, so you weren't aware of that, common bond between you, right? Both of you guys being Native architects.
That's right.
You weren't aware of that when you got involved in all this?
No, I really didn't know anything about the original construction of the building in terms of the design of it. I knew the history of the building and that its life was short-lived and that it's been sitting, vacant for so long. But no, I didn't have any experience with its design or its origination.
Mm-hmm. And that process of you having been involved and now learning a lot about the beginnings of the buildings, the architects involved. What do you have to say about that? Do you feel like a deeper connection in a way to the building?
I do so much, and I've been making several efforts to try to reach Dennis Sunroads. Unfortunately, with no success. Hopefully, he's still with us, and maybe he'll get back to me sometime soon. I've reached out to his family members through Facebook, hopefully to reach out to him, just to express my appreciation for the work that he did, and to let him know that hopefully, if it comes to pass where it's put in a situation where I'm responsible for its upkeep and renovation for the future, that I would promise him that it's in good hands.
Yeah, and when you see maybe his success with, stuff like the turtle building and your success with your own projects and your own work over the years in architecture, what do you think that does for maybe other members of the Native community who, let's say they're in high school, right? Mm-hmm. And they're trying to think about what they want to do later on in life, and they might not know that architecture is a possibility for them, right? What do you think that does?
Boy, that's such a good question. I was raised in a home with a single mom who never graduated high school. She never got past 11th grade. So college was never mentioned in our household. Going to school, kids would say, oh, you were one of the smart ones, But when I graduated, my mother's guidance was, you better go in the service. So I went in the service for, I went in the Air Force for a little while. So I would hope that if I get to visit more classrooms or if I get to visit more young groups, that I could tell them that this possibility is out there. It's unfortunate that a lot of households aren't told that college is an option.
And you've made that sort of Haudenosaunee connection part of your architecture firm, right? And Annawarra Architecture. Talk about how some of those, and you mentioned earlier environmentalism and protecting the resources we have, how does that factor into the work you do, maybe even outside of the turtle and other projects around Western New York?
I get asked often, do you try to work your culture into your designs? And if I own the project and I've done some work on my own house, I'm designing a new house, then I can work that stuff in there, and I'd love to do it. But when you're working on somebody else's project and they have their own program and they have their own ideas of what they want their project to look like, it's difficult to work those sorts of things in. You may be able to get a hint of it here or there, but it's always in my heart to be conscious of the way that we use materials and the approaches and the long-term viability of the buildings. So just beyond wanting to make sound buildings that repel water and that are usable, I try to work into the details ways to minimize materials or speed its growth or just reduce the overall cost of the project from an environmental standpoint.
And
as far as a lot of those things go, are there any other like factors, I guess, you see as far as the Western New York, the Haudenosaunee region, that could make it, I guess, opportunity for more Native architects to, follow in your footstep, more people to follow into the field?
I think that the Turtle, if and when it becomes a successful project and becomes a center for our culture, that more people will come visit. Hopefully more people from our culture will come visit it. And that means more young people. And then they'll have the opportunity to see the building and appreciate the building. And then while I'm still there, I'll be able to tell them that the history of the building, that it started with a Native architect, that I'm a Native architect, that hope to reawaken it, and that architecture could be in their future as well. Being that there's less than 0.5% of all architects that are Native American, I would love to see that change, because in our culture, we have so much to offer in terms of architecture with our appreciation for nature.
Yeah. And I mean, you think about, the Haudenosaunee and longhouses being, a main form back in the day of dwellings. You see out west, right, with the Pueblos and things like that. I'm interested to know, when you're in architecture school and you're learning these things, when American culture is taught, is the Native American lens, is that introduced in education at all for architects?
To be quite frank, I took an incongruous route to becoming an architect. I was a single dad and I was raising four boys by myself. So when I first went to college, I went to NCCC and learned how to do CAD drafting just so that I could get a job in an office somewhere. And I worked as a drafter for a very, very, very long time for several different firms. And then once my sons started to grow up and move out, went into service. One of my sons is an officer in the military. So once they grew up and started to move out, it provided me the opportunity to extend my education. So then I went to UB, and the quickest route to a bachelor's degree was a bachelor's in arts of environmental design, which is environmental planning. So I took that route just to get my bachelor's degree so that I would be eligible to take the exam to be an architect. At that point, I had 20 years of experience in architecture, running architecture offices at different places, but not having my license yet. So in order to become an architect, I needed to get a bachelor's, and the environmental design was the quickest way. I also got a minor with distinction in architecture. That means I got all 4.0s on my classes that were in architecture. So I really didn't get exposed to the studio environment and all the architectural teaching that people typically get that go through that program. Mm-hmm.
Do you see that as maybe an advantage as far as, like you mentioned, as far as preservation and, minimization of, using more resources than you need to, that kind of thing?
I was fortunate that I worked for several developers, and developers are watch every penny just by nature. That's how they make their money, because they do volume. And you're not necessarily rewarded, but it's appreciated when you can offer details in your designs that save on material costs and make the build easier. So I grew up professionally in that environment, and that helped me move forward, and it lended itself to my appreciation for the environment through my Native heritage.
Mm-hmm. And that effort to save the Turtle, I mean, right now that's kind of where you guys are at, right? Just getting sort of the draft documents, grassroots efforts like making T-shirts and selling those, the candlelight vigils. Talk a bit about what you've seen out of some of the other people involved in this group and you guys as a whole on what you're trying to do.
We just had elections, like informal elections last night. So we just formed a board last night where our bylaws are just getting written. So while it's passionately been undertaken for a couple of years by Carl and some others, it's really becoming a formality now. All the things are getting in place so that we can start actually taking in donations. Because the mentioning the drawings that I had to pay for, eventually the Turtle would like to purchase those from my business so that they're the owner of those drawings, but that requires money. So these little fundraisers, NACS is going to allow us to start taking donations through NACS, and then we can pay for things like that, pay for things like the candlelight vigil, and then get bigger from there.
Mm-hmm. And what's it like to have everyone working together, coming from these so many varied backgrounds, right? Whether it is, again, you coming from, like you said, you have ties back to the Mohawk Nation, but also like not growing up with that history as much. Mm-hmm. And I know Sean Wilson of Native American Community Service is coming from the Cayuga Nation, and I believe one of your members I spoke to recently is from one of the
Navajo.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, from the Navajo.
And we nation. Also have a member who is from the Seneca Nation.
Yeah, and so, like, you know, and then also you just have community members, right? Who have no ties to the Native American That's community right. beyond that they want to yeah. help out, right?
And they're in my observations too, you know, it's people have different connections to the turtle, right? Either maybe they were working there when it was operating, maybe they were a young child and going there with their family. Maybe they just heard stories from older relatives about it, and they themselves weren't alive to experience it. And they're all bringing those perspectives together. And for you, it's, you know, partially about, in, I guess, recent times, learning about your Native American heritage and getting involved in this process with other people at different ends of the spectrum there.
I wish that I had been involved in it sooner. But having only gotten my license 6 years ago, I think this is the exact time for me to be involved in it. And a group of such passionate people that's becoming so much more diverse now, it's really taking off.
And what about, what do you see as, like, I guess, the next evolution then, right? You know, what's the, you've talked about, and I, you know, again, Sean Wilson has talked about needing, now that you have those blueprints and even stuff like, okay, how many people can we fit into the space, and that'll change the capabilities as far as use. But also, you know, what is maybe the next step as far as, you know, that you see as far as, like, things such as financial, you know, situations and promotion and, again, getting the word out there, because grassroots is great. But, you know, is there a point at which you say, maybe we want to take this beyond grassroots, we want to take this to kind of a higher level of, you know, promotion and being able to reach a wider audience, I guess.
The group itself, Friends of the Turtle, is becoming diverse culturally, but there's people on the board who are, or people in the group who, me as an architect, somebody is involved who has a lot of experience in nonprofits. Somebody is involved who has a lot of experience writing business plans. Somebody else is a bookkeeper, an accountant by profession. So it seems predestined that all these people who have all these skills in areas that are exactly what the turtle needs right now, and hopefully my involvement can lend a little credibility to it. Once I have the drawings in hand, then we can start doing things like programming and space planning and determining how many people, not only that we can fit in the building, but the types of activities that we can do in the building, the energy efficiency upgrades we can make to the building. So then we start designing, developing the cost models of what it's going to take to not only purchase the building, you know, once we can enter into negotiations to purchase it, but then what's it going to take to build it up to current codes? Mm-hmm. And then what can we do? What sort of classes and activities and movie nights and powwows and lectures and, you know, sleepovers and whatever we might be able to do in there to get people in the door?
Yeah. And I think a lot of it too is reimagining the space as well, because, you know, it's great to bring back some of that programming that was there. But, you know, the place closed in, I believe, the early 1990s.
That's right.
So many technological and advancement in the arts and interactive things that were never even thought imaginable back then that now has the possibility now. Talk about how exciting that is.
It's so exciting. If the internet existed when the building closed the way that it exists now, I don't think it ever would have closed, because so many people didn't know about that building or weren't even aware, like I said earlier, that Native Americans even existed still. So if the internet had existed and our reach had been out there, the building wouldn't have closed. But I feel now that we can offer the building online to people to let us know, let them know that it exists and bring attention to it and get people in the door and just make it available to everybody, not only as a service point to the Native American community who may need to go there for service. We want to be a place of service for our community, but also to save our traditions and to share them with the world.
Yeah, and the center point, you talked about that world perspective. Niagara Falls is one of the natural wonders of the world. You have people from so many countries going there, and they might not, like you said, know that Native Americans, that we still exist. So I think the center point here too is just the location in general. just it works from your guys' perspective.
That's right. I've heard the number 9 million people visit the falls every year. And, you know, if 1% of those people stumbled by the turtle with no advertising whatsoever and walked through the door, you know, could we almost be economically feasible at that number? Now imagine with proper marketing and interactions with other organizations, with the Seneca Niagara Casino possibly sending people our way, or partnerships between those two organizations where we send people back and forth. You know, we tried to tie our candle vigil the other night with the fashion show that they had going on. It was the same night. We scheduled our event just slightly before their event, hoping that people would stop by our vigil on the way to their fashion show.
It's a great conversation here with James Baptiste, part of the Friends of the Turtle effort out in Niagara Falls, and Alex Simone of WBFO. I'm Ryan Zenner. We'll be right back with more What's Next after this on your NPR station.
We at Buffalo Toronto Public Media take pride in bringing you your favorite national programs like Fresh Air, All Things Considered, and Morning Edition. But what makes WBFO so special are its local programs, learning together about how government works in bite-sized pieces on Compact Civics with host Corey McCants.
Here's a quick guide on polling locations. A polling place is where you cast your ballot during elections. In America, the term polling place refers to the building, while polling station refers to the specific room or area where voting happens.
And diving into pop culture and local happenings on Group Chat with host Bentley and a revolving panel of friends in the know.
I really miss having to actually wait to tune in for a show and be there at the certain time, like having to run home and like turn on the TV at a certain time to like watch your show.
Yeah. Like more national unity then too.
Yes.
Like we're all
tuned in. Everybody is watching at the same time, and you can like call. And
ever
say,
since
did you
streaming, it's just gone downhill.
This is Public Media.
Where do you go when you want news you can trust? WBFO, of course. And when you just want to catch up on the day's news, you can go to the WBFO Brief podcast. Listen to the WBFO Brief every weekday wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to like and subscribe, so you can always stay up to date with the news you need.
Did you know that WNED PBS is always working on great new local shows for you to watch? Documentaries like Klein Hand's Gift to Buffalo, which tells the story of Buffalo's music hall.
The hall is very intimate, and that intimacy makes everyone who comes in here feel a part of our family.
Fun and educational series like Compact Science.
Believe it or not, peppers are technically fruits.
And Shakespeare's greatest hits, featuring some of his best-known soliloquies and monologues.
We are such stuff as dreams are made of.
You can watch them all on our website at wned.org/local shows. While you're there, check out the show pages and mini websites for additional content such as bonus features, photo galleries, and lesson plans. Find it all at wned.org/local shows.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
Welcome back to What's Next. I'm Ryan Zunner here, joined with guest host Alex Simone, and of course our guest today, James Baptiste, one of the less than 0.5% of architects in that is indigenous in this country. Great to have you join us here, James.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and great conversation earlier about a lot of things about the turtle and sort of your efforts. We want to kind of dive into you know, your background as well. You know, you talked about you didn't really learn about your Native American heritage till, you know, later in life. And now here you are involved in a project that is so impactful to so many in the Native American community and a center for a place, the Turtle, where a lot of people can connect with that culture and family and history and so many things.
That's true. It's very sad in my heart that I didn't grow up with the culture that I feel that I should have. Growing up, I didn't learn that I was Native American until I was 18 or 19 years old. Yeah, I was raised by my mom and my adopted father, and my adopted father passed away when I was 10 in a motorcycle mm-hmm. accident. So growing up, I thought, well, I was just living with a single mom, and eventually I learned that I hadn't met my father yet and that he was Native American. So when I graduated high school, I met him for the first time and found that his parents were from the Tiendanega Indian Reserve, and that I have part of that lineage, and then hoped someday that I would be exposed to that. So I've been kind of picking up the culture secondhand, being raised off the reservation. So I've never lived on a reservation or a territory and learned that culture.
Certainly an expansion of your family to the nth degree. I mean, when you're involved, especially in these projects and getting to know people, you know, they're distant cousins. They're a friend of one of your relatives or something like that. Does something like this connect you even more with that culture, with your efforts with the turtle?
It sure does. I've had so many fortunate opportunities now. So we do tabling events as Friends of the Turtle. So we'll set up our table and go to different events to try to let people know about our effort, whether that's something going on at the Tuscarora Reservation. You know, they had a bake sale and a community event. Or I just went out to the Rickard Farm a couple of weeks ago for a corn husking bee and sat around and husked corn for 2 days for 4 hours a day and talked about the turtle and all. But it was an opportunity for me to learn more about my culture and interact with the people that I should have been interacting with for all that time. And it was just good for my soul. It changed me every day I was there.
Yeah, it learns your brain, or you learn stuff through your brain, learn stuff through your soul, through your heart. Yeah. With the turtle, is that kind of the hope that this place turns into that sort of center for the Native American community, for the outside community, for international community?
If you grow up off the reservation can feel like it has its back turned to the rest of the world, because frankly, it feels like the world has forgotten about Native Americans. So why wouldn't it kind of turn its shoulder to the wind? And it can be a difficult environment to work yourself into. Fortunately, now I have this connection and I can interact with people who I should have been interacting with for a long time. So if we can provide an opportunity with the turtle to be a place where people who share our lineage but don't have contacts on the reservation, where they can come and experience some of that at the turtle, that would be phenomenal. I would love to have a place like that to go myself today.
Yeah. And for you, like it's really all about like spaces, right? For Native Americans to exist, to grow, to flourish. You know, you're part of a small percentage of Native American architects. And I, you know, there's probably a small percentage of spaces in urban environments for Native Americans to have that sense of community. Because, you know, you can't just be cast off to the reservation, right? And you mentioned about that sometimes it feels like it's purposely cast off in a way. The location of this being in that sort of urban environment, it could kind of spread culture in a way.
That's what I'm hoping. There are so many elders that have that culture to share, and it's often been an oral tradition. You know, obviously with technology, we're getting much, much better about saving that culture. But having a place to share it is the important thing. And getting it shared in person is so much more valuable than getting it offline. I can go online and I can learn a little Mohawk language, or I can learn a couple of stories, you know, reading something. But to have somebody sitting there in front of me and having sort of a faux fireside chat in the middle of the turtle could be a life-changing experience for some young person.
Yeah.
And especially, like you said, you know, with this lack of Native architects, right? Just according from what I've seen from a statistic from the American Indian Council of Architects and Engineers, they list that there are fewer than 50 licensed architects who are enrolled members of a nation.
That's right.
And they estimate around 300 with Native American lineage who are not enrolled with, you know, one of the nations. So I guess, have you in your personal lives, in your interactions, have you seen any indications that maybe those numbers are improving? You know, is there, I guess, I don't want to say any hope, but like, is there any, is there any inclination or not inclination, but yeah, is there anything you see where it's like, yeah, this is trending in a positive direction. It might be at a lower level now, mm-hmm. but it looks like it's going somewhere good.
Yeah, and I wonder if like infrastructure investments seen on native territories, if that helps those numbers at all?
I wish I had a clear answer for that question. Part of it, just by statistics, you have to look at what percentage of the U.S. population is Native American anymore, and how does that correspond to the number of architects that there are in the world. Becoming an architect is difficult. It really is. And if you already have hurdles in place, you know, not being exposed to the potential of college educations and things like that. So I don't know if I could see it growing. But it's on people like me especially, but other architects, to go to schools and go to local events and expose young people, and hopefully on my part, young natives, to architecture and the potential of that profession. And even if they don't become an architect, if they become a drafter or a designer or something like that, maybe they'll pass it to somebody else.
Right. I mean, you see so many infrastructure issues on native reserves. You know, the biggest things talked about, obviously, water infrastructure, but like aging housing. Mm-hmm. You take a drive through, you know, some native territories, and the housing, unfortunately, looks like a third world country. How important is it that Native Americans, you know, get that education, that perspective to help improve their own communities?
I would like to say that I get approached regularly to be involved in projects that are happening on reservations, mm-hmm. but I don't. I've never been contacted by a reservation to help with any project that's going on there. Part of it is that reservations don't need building permits, mm-hmm. and reservations can't get mortgages. So they have their own firms and their own, you know, organizations that do that in-house and take care of their own projects. I would love to hear from them someday, but at this point, no.
Do you think some of that's maybe just about changing the nature, changing the way those interactions take place? You know, maybe like, again, like you said, well, if you, the way you're in it is kind of you being a part of this system where everything is sort of done by permit and that kind of, and they operate in a way where they're, you know, like you said, they're outside of that and they don't need that. Then that's, it's right. Like, well, you have to sort of build a new, I guess a new mode of communication.
The best I can do is lean into my culture and you know, making sure that the name of my business, Anawara, which is the Mohawk word for turtle, and a turtle and the buffalo skyline being part of my logo and on my business cards, it just putting it out there every chance I get that, listen, I'm one of the very few Native American architects, and in my heart, the Native American traditions of environmentalism are what I base my profession on. So you'll know what you're getting if you approach me. Mm.
Yeah, and also you mentioned about you have quite a bit of work locally that might be recognizable.
Yes, some projects, absolutely.
Yeah, I was fortunate last year to win the Buffalo Business First Golden Brick Award, which is the top project in the area for the Riverworks Ferris Wheel installation. And people would often ask, what does an architect have to do with a Ferris wheel? And I was just in the right place at the right time. They needed they also own Pearl Street Grill and needed their elevator replaced. So a friend of a friend recommended me to help them replace their elevator. And they were very happy with the work that I did. And they said, we also own Riverworks and we're thinking about putting up a Ferris wheel. You want to help us? And of course I jumped at that. I didn't know what I didn't know. I just wanted the opportunity to work on a project like that. So I met with Earl Ketry and we walked around the site and they had some ideas about where they wanted to put a Ferris wheel. And then they pointed atop what they call the old Stonehenge, which was the foundations from old grain silos that had previously fallen. And it was just this wreckage of concrete. And Earl pointed, what about up there? I think jokingly, half-heartedly. And I said, we could do that. If we cleaned off the top of that and poured a new foundation 15 feet up in the air on top of these foundations, we could create some custom stairs that go up there and we could make this a real attraction. And the people agreed and won that award. And it's kind of a adaptive reuse project in the sense that I have a lot of experience doing adaptive reuse, turning old Catholic schools into apartment buildings, the old mattress factory, turning that into apartments, and now turning the foundations from old grain silos into the base of a Ferris wheel. It's just fantastic.
And is that how you see the turtle going, is more of an adaptive reuse project? Because the building isn't, you know, that old, But certainly, you know, you bring a new perspective being an architect into this process.
It was built in a time where the standards are not such today with regards to insulation, energy efficiency. It probably has lead. It probably has asbestos. So there's going to be a lot of remediation. And then every effort that we can take to utilize new techniques, geothermal heating, solar energy, to bring the building up using the standards that are important in my heart of environmentalism to that building. That building should represent every effort that is taken to make it a green building.
Mm-hmm. And I think that goes along with just environmentalism and the turtle symbolism, right? As the protector of the earth in general, you want this space to be reflective of those principles that Haudenosaunee people have been living by for years.
This is an opportunity to walk the walk. If people walked around the building and said, oh, the turtle is the protector of the earth and her elements, but then you walked around and it didn't represent those values, then it's just a facade, and that doesn't do anybody any good. The building doesn't mean as much if it doesn't walk that walk, and I think the things that are important to me, then I failed as well.
At the same time, does that at all like reach the point of becoming almost a little bit of a concern just from the fact that you know, every new change you guys have to make or that has to be made, not necessarily you guys, but like every new change that has to be made to the building, to the space, to that land is dollars, right? Is, you know, more money that has to be paid. And that might be another roadblock in whether it's interactions with the current owners or just, you know, discussions with contractors and that kind of thing, right? So, you know, is there kind of a push and pull with that?
There is. And that's the case with every project. Every project, you as an architect, you want it to be as accessible, as equitable, as energy efficient. You want to make the best building that you possibly can. And you hope to work with developers that share all those values. And most do start out that way, but then it really comes down to dollars and cents. So what things are we willing to cut until the building becomes affordable? And I try to find as many ways as I can to adjust things so that the building does not go in the wrong direction. And that will be the same with this. The difference with the turtle is that hopefully we'll be able to obtain state or federal dollars and incentives for going green. I know that we're going to face some headwinds in the next coming couple of years with green infrastructure, but hopefully we can get the ball rolling before those things go into place.
Yeah, and like was mentioned in the story, Friends of the Turtle were recently informed that they had the opportunity, you know, had this building met the guidelines for application for a state landmark, right? It needs to go through the process, but the state said you have the opportunity to apply, right? Have you?
Because there was that initial city denial,
right,
in the city of Niagara Falls.
Exactly. So have you had maybe the chance to work on any buildings that you've worked on where maybe those were state landmark designation or you know, have you had in your educational studies, you know, anything you've looked at as far as learning about what qualifies for state landmark designation and that kind of thing?
We would go to local experts who specialize in the landmarking process, who have all the expertise in working with SHPO and the red tape that's required to maintain compliance with SHPO regulations. But then from an architectural point of view, it's our job to know what the design details that are required to be in compliance with SHPO in order for them to make the funds or tax credits that are available. But yeah, I've worked on several tens of thousands of dollars or tens of millions of dollars worth of projects, turning old Catholic schools into apartment buildings, the scale house in Tonawanda, the old mattress factory, like I mentioned. All of those were SHPO projects that were buildings that you wouldn't think would be appropriate for mixed use multifamily, and now they're great. They're, you know, fully leased out and very nice places to live.
All right. We'll continue our conversation here on What's Next with James Baptiste after this short break.
Our mission at Buffalo Toronto Public Media is to serve our local community And on WBFO, we do that by keeping you informed and connected to your community, whether it's by hearing from a local Black poet about what it was like to move from the inner city to the suburbs on What's Next.
So that emotional change with that culture change combined let me realize that basketball and being physical wasn't enough. I needed a way to figure out my emotions. So the first poem I wrote in the cafetorium was of Sweet Home Middle School was Outcast.
Or it's exploring the East Side Garden Walk.
It's wonderful that we're seeing engagement in beautification and sharing gardens, because we believe that we can build more vibrant communities by sharing our gardens, by sharing our stories, and by building real connections between people. We came through as neighbors and cleaned the space out and began plot by plot putting plants in.
This is Public Media.
Hey, parents and caregivers. Want to help your child stay on track at school? Then check out Reading Rainbow Stories. Visit readingrainbow.org or the Reading Rainbow YouTube channel today.
The best of Western New York high school football is on WBFO every Friday night. Buffalo Toronto Public Media has partnered with Western New York Athletics to bring you the play-by-play of all the great football action live every Friday night at 7 all season long. Listen to Friday Night Lights on 88.7 FM or streaming on WBFO.org and the WBFO app.
Did you know that Buffalo Toronto Public Media produces shows that earn New York Emmy nominations and awards, Webby Awards, Telly Awards, GLAAD nominations, and New York State Broadcaster Association Awards? Check out our award-winning productions like Compact Science, Compact History, Let's Go, Brave Spaces, Kleinhand's Gift to Buffalo, and much more on the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel or visit WNED.org. This is Public Media.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
We're back with more What's Next here on WBFO. I'm Ryan Zunner, guest host today, along with guest host Alex Simone. And we're, again, still joined by James Baptiste, architect, who's part of an effort out in Niagara Falls to save the Turtle Building. James, thanks for sticking around with us here.
I appreciate it. It's been so nice to be here today.
Yeah, it's been a great conversation so far. One thing that we want to get into, right, Niagara Falls being right there on the, as many Haudenosaunee put it, the imaginary line.
That's
right. Because Haudenosaunee territory, historically extends out throughout New York, through Quebec, through Ontario, through parts of Pennsylvania. Talk about maybe some of the roadblocks there, but also how having a place like this right in Niagara Falls, mm-hmm. right on that imaginary line, is powerful and impactful to the Native community, the entire, like, really Northeast.
It sure is. Being on this side of the border is a blessing and sometimes a curse, in that it was very difficult to even become a minority business enterprise in New York State because my tribe is from Canada. So I applied for MBE status in New York State and was declined. And I learned that tribes need to be recognized by the federal government and by the state government in order to receive a minority business status. So when I was declined for status, I had to hire a local Native attorney. His name was Lee Red Eye, and he was very knowledgeable in these things, and he filed an appeal on my behalf. And after about a year and a half of waiting and legal fees, he was able to finally convince them that my small business should be registered as a minority business in New York State.
Right. And there's historic treaties with that. You know, talk about like the Jay Treaty that the United States Congress ratified, talking about those equal rights for Natives, especially the Haudenosaunee, having, on both sides of that imaginary line that we talk about.
That's right.
Just seems like there's no maybe thought put into that.
Sometimes it's bureaucratic. From my research, I learned that there's several hundred tribes that have applied for recognition with state or federal governments that they just can't get through them all.
Yeah. Well, because Tai and Danega, they're fully recognized by the Canadian government up there. And
that's right.
you know, obviously a Mohawk nation, which we have Mohawk territories here in New York State. Yeah.
You would think that if you had your tribal card, that if you apply for minority status, that your tribal card that proves that you've been approved as a member of that tribe, that they could easily say, okay, well, here, the state government would never ask an African-American person, where's your heritage? You're just an African-American, so here's your minority business. And there's no extra qualification to a female applicant to become a woman-owned business. You're just a female. So having that extra layer of proof required to be a Native American-owned minority business was insulting and disappointing, to be honest.
Now, I mean, as difficult as you also did say, though, having worked on the river works, right? You've now reached a point, though, where you've done some really recognizable things that people, especially around Buffalo, around Western New York, would look at and go, oh, yeah, I know that place.
Yeah, that's so fortunate. And it's been a great source of advertisement for me and recognition. It led to me getting a contract recently with Erie County. They gave out grants using COVID money to several hundred small businesses in Erie County. I think they gave away, let's say, 400 of them or so. And they awarded my business 156 small businesses who I would provide architectural services to. So if they got a $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 grant for improvements to the front of their business, they would be directed to me, and the county paid me a flat rate to take care of each of those businesses and help them make the upgrades that they wanted to with those grant dollars that they got. I don't know if I would have gotten that contract if it wasn't for the work that I did at Riverworks.
Yeah, it's a small business essentially helping in a way a small business, quote unquote. You yourself, I mean, you are much of the company, right? You are the leader, you're the drafter, you're all of that, right?
I'm building a small house next door to where I live now, and there's a dedicated office space in the new house that my wife and I are building. But the house I live in now, that I've been in for 17 years, my office is my living room. My plotter is in the dining room. I answer my phone. I answer all my emails. I ask people not to text me too much because that's kind of intrusive. But and hopefully I'll always be able to deal with it that way. Of course, I hope to expand, and I would love to hire young people. And I would love to hire some young Native friends and teach them about architecture and give them a leg up in this business. Maybe they'll go on to be an engineer or an interior designer or something else, but I would love to be able to be in a position to give some opportunities like that.
And how important is it to show that it's also not always going to be the glitz and glamour, right? It's not always going to be building this amazing feat of, you know, human, development and, you know, construction. It's also, well, somebody's got to build the houses as That's well. Right. Somebody's got to, like you said, somebody's got to put in the elevator at the, at the restaurant.
Architecture is very often meat and potatoes. The first book I ever read when I was considering becoming an architect on the topic of architecture, it said, don't go into it if you're hoping to make a lot of money. And it's probably a good idea if you're going to open your own firm to have a spouse or significant other who has a steady income, because there are a few starchitects in the world. There are a few people whose names that you can really just out of thin air, you know it, and you say that name and everybody knows that name. The rest of us are taking care of the houses and the porches and the patios and the decks. And once in a while we get lucky and we get a Riverworks or the elevator at Pearl Street.
And architecture like that ties in so much to the city's, how people view the city, right? I mean, you look right here in our studio, we have, you know, City Hall, you know, Art Deco, so many great examples of architecture that you can really learn history about just really by looking at it and looking how it's built. Is there the hope there with the turtle there being saving that could be a symbol of Native architecture, of the hard work?
In terms of symbolism, when you drive past the turtle right now, it's been whitewashed. In order to keep all the paint from flecking off, the current owner has gone on and just put a whole bunch of white paint on the outside. And it's symbolic for what has been done to the building and to our culture. And we would like to flush the color back out into that building and make it a real moment in Niagara Falls, if you will.
Yeah, it's all my questions.
Okay. There is so much connection that people have with the turtle. I remember reading one article that, you know, tour bus drivers were going by and seeing you guys out there and giving you the thumbs up. There's that sense that people want something like this.
They do.
You know?
There's some TV shows on now and some recent movies. You know, Kevin, even as far back as Kevin Costner in Dances with Wolves, there's a new appreciation for what our culture has to offer. And other than movies and TV shows or Res Dogs, where are people going to go to get the real culture? And I really want the Turtle to be that place.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty, great. Thank you so much. James Baptiste, architect here, leading the charge along with a great group of people at Friends of the Turtle for the Turtle Building in Niagara Falls. James, thanks so much for joining us here on What's Next.
Thank you so much. I really enjoy everything you guys do.
Appreciate that. And for What's Next here on WBFO, I'm Ryan Zunner, joined here with Alex Simone as guest host on this episode of What's Next. Thanks so much for listening.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.